We'll call the meeting to order. Ask the clerk to read the roll.
Mike Polakoff.
Here.
Michael Serpy.
Here.
Wayne Castle.
Here.
Deb Scarda.
Here.
Jim Bandura is excused. Judy Giuliana.
Here.
Bill Stobig.
Here.
John Skalbeck.
Here.
Brock Williamson.
Here.
Quorum present. Correspondence, Jean.
I've done this evening.
Citizens' comments. We have two items here that are public hearing, one or two. And if there's if you wish to address this board on either one of those items that are public hearing, you can wait until that item is called. If there's anything else you'd like to address this commission on, now's your time to do that. Anybody wishing to speak? Anybody wishing to speak? We'll close the public hearings, open up the new business, and we're going to take item A and B together, but we'll take separate actions on both. First one is the two certified survey maps and memorandum of understanding, including TID number 7, public improvements, and item B is preliminary site and operational plan. Jean?
Mr. Chairman, members of the Plan Commission, we have two items on the agenda. The first is the request of Jeff Verdickel, agent on behalf of Riverview LLC, the approval of two certified survey maps, a memorandum of understanding, including the TID 7 public improvement plans, and this is for sanitary sewer mains, lift station, water mains, roadway improvements, including streetlights and street trees, and this is within the State Line 94 Corporate Park. And the second item related to this petition is the preliminary site and operational plans, also at the request of Jeff Verdickel on behalf of Riverview LLC. Again, this property is located at the northeast corner of 120th Avenue, or the east frontage road to 122nd Street, which is County ML. And this is for the building shell and the associated site improvements for the development of a 590,525-square-foot manufacturing facility. And this is for Fresenius Kabi. These items are related, will be discussed at the same time. However, separate motions will be asked for by the Plan Commission. The petitioner recently created State Line 94 Corporate Park and is working on plans to install infrastructure, which includes the lift station, sanitary sewer, water and roadway improvements, including streetlights and street trees. This is for the development of a new corporate park. In addition, the petitioner is requesting to begin construction of the building shell and the site improvements for their first building in the park, which is a 590,525-square-foot manufacturing facility for Fresenius Kabi. And this is to be located, again, at that northeast corner of 120th Avenue, which is the east frontage road, and 122nd Street. The State Line 94 public improvements and CSMs, the roadway improvements, a traffic impact analysis was completed as part of the Village Lakeview West traffic analysis. The TIA was updated by the State Line 94 developer. The TIA was then approved by the Wisconsin Department of Transportation for the State Line 94 Corporate Park. At this time, as part of the development, certain improvements shall be made at the intersection of 120th Avenue and 122nd Street, as well as turning lanes at the entrances to the Fresenius Kabi development site. Additional roadway improvements will be required when additional land in the corporate park is developed as they head northward. The village, with the assistance of the developer, has submitted a Transportation Economic Assistance T-Grant application to the DOT, and this is for the request of financial assistance for the off-site public east frontage road improvements, which is subject to the creation of jobs and a jobs guarantee for the state. The application is currently under review with the Wisconsin DOT. For the public sanitary sewer and lift station improvements, public sanitary sewer will be extended south from the end of 116th Avenue, which is near Breeze Terrace at the north end of the map, south through the corporate park within easements to the new lift station to be located adjacent to 120th Avenue. The lift station will be constructed by the developer. Upon completion and acceptance, will be owned and maintained by the village. The sanitary sewer will continue south to service Fresenius Kabi site, with sewer extension that could be further extended to service lands that are south of 122nd Street and to service land east of 120th Avenue, which is actually west of the Fresenius Kabi site. Public water improvements, public water main and related appurtenances will be extended within 120th Avenue from 108th Street, which is shown with the just west of Premium Outlets, to 122nd Street and along 122nd Street to the east end of the corporate park. The TID project plan impact. This development will need to be in compliance with the overall development plans and the TID number 7 project plan for State Line 94, including its development agreement. In addition, the village will enter into a memorandum of understanding, or referred to as an MOU, for the installation of the public improvements, which includes everything I'd mentioned earlier, the lift station, sanitary sewer, water, roadway improvements, including public streetlights and trees. The attached draft MOU and the exhibits will be finalized and executed prior to the installation of any of the required public improvements. In addition, the T grant would need to be approved by the DOT prior to any roadway improvements being publicly bid. With respect to the certified survey maps, there are two certified survey maps being presented at this time. The first, CSM, creates a 46.899-acre property, and this is for the development of the Fresenius Kabi facility at that northeast corner of 120th Avenue, 122nd Street. It also dedicates additional right-of-way on County Trunk Highway ML, dedicates sanitary sewer easements for public sanitary sewer, and dedicates additional easements related to their development. The second CSM creates three parcels and dedicates the required easements for the aforementioned public sewer and water improvements. Parcel 2 is 11.333-acre parcel and is located on the west side of 120th Avenue. This lot is currently primarily wetlands and primary environmental corridor. Parcel 3 is 230.159 acres. This parcel, as you can see on the map, is very large, and it's subject to further land division when additional development is being proposed. However, required easements for municipal sewer and water are being dedicated for these improvements with this lot to service the corporate park. Parcel 4 will be created for the required lift station site, and this is located as a smaller triangle-type size parcel. It's adjacent to the east side of 120th Avenue. This parcel will be transferred to the village. However, the developer will construct the lift station. Upon the village's acceptance of the lift station construction, the ongoing maintenance will be the responsibility of the village. Parcel 4 shall be expanded so that it has frontage on the public street and includes the entire lift station improvements. Currently, it looks like the parcel that they were going to create just kind of floats out there, but it really does need to connect directly to 120th Avenue, and we've noted that in our staff comments. So the second item on the agenda related to this project is the Fresenius Kabi preliminary site and operational plans. This is proposed to be their new regional office and pharmaceutical processing facility. On March 11, 2019, the Plan Commission conditionally approved preliminary site and operational plans to begin the mass grading for the proposed new regional office and processing facility for Fresenius Kabi. This approval tonight would allow for additional site improvements and to allow for the construction of the building shell. Final site and operational plan approval will be required for interior building plans along with their final signage plans. Fresenius Kabi is a global healthcare company specializing in life-saving medicines and technologies for infusion, transfusion, and clinical nutrition applications. Their products and services are used to help care for critically and chronically ill patients, and the company is committed to putting essential medicines and technologies into the hands of people who help patients find the best answers to the healthcare challenges they face. Fresenius Kabi provides high-quality products with one of the most comprehensive product portfolios for the core therapeutic areas. Fresenius Kabi is a licensed facility by governing bodies such as the Board of Pharmacy, Drug Enforcement Agency, and is operated as a verified accredited wholesale distributor site, all of which require strict policies and procedures for the movement and handling of products, as well as a highly trained team of associates to administer the process. The entire facility will be operated in a validated, temperature-controlled environment and Schedule II controlled substances handling and areas which require a DEA-registered vault. In addition, the facility will be a secure environment with card readers, camera systems, and full-time security. The property is Zone M5, Production and Manufacturing District. The M5 district provides for manufacturing, assembly, office, and research and development uses, with limited warehouse and distribution uses within an enclosed structure where no high-hazard uses are allowed. The M5 district limits the storage and distribution areas to not more than 30% of the building, and they are not more than 25% of the exterior lineal footage of the building to be used for dock tours. Fresenius Kabi's intended use and building design meets the requirements of the M5 district, and the building provides for the following uses: office areas, 16,264 square feet, cooler storage, 4,838 square feet, controlled vault area, 46,000 square feet, processing area for receiving, 81,395 square feet, raw material and finished products for assembly packaging, 334,319 square feet, processing area for packaging and assembly, 79,349 square feet, and circulation, 28,552 square feet. The hours of operation are intended to be from 4 a.m. to 11 p.m. with two shifts, and it's estimated that at startup there'll be 100 employees, and that number could reach up to 164 employees by 2028. These workers will be skilled in operating equipment, as well as all regulations related to CGMP, drug supply chain security, and DEA requirements. They have a full electronic training system that ensures employees are trained on appropriate policies and procedures for the particular job function. There are 200 parking spaces, including handicapped accessible spaces, 25 truck parking spaces, and 44 dock doors. It's estimated that there'll be approximately 500 automobile trips and 166 truck trips per day. For Fresenius Kabi, operations are such that materials arrive on the north side of the facility, are processed and packaged in the center, and then leave the building on the opposite side, thus having dock doors on both north and south sides of the building. As such, dock doors will face 122nd Street. The M5 district requirements allows for dock doors, to face a public street only under special circumstances with an approved screening and maintenance plan as approved by the Plan Commission. And you can see the outline and what we have talked about before with respect to the landscaping, the screening by way of fencing, as well as the berming and the other elements that are being proposed in order to screen those dock doors. No truck traffic will exit the property to the south. The western access to 122nd Street is for passenger vehicles of the employees and visitors, and the eastern access to 122nd Street is a gated emergency access only. The dock doors face south will be screened from view on 122nd Street. The building will be approximately 15.5 feet below 122nd Street, and a composite privacy fence, as I mentioned, with substantial landscaping, including ornamental trees, evergreens, and shrubbery, will also be installed along the southern property line to further screen the dock from 122nd Street. Fresenius Kabi is planning to take occupancy of the building in April of 2020. With that, we have representatives here from State Line 94, Jeff Redickel and Mark Good, and their team, if you have any questions or for them to make a further presentation.
Jeff or Mark, do you have anything to add? Please. Just name an address for the record, please.
Jeff tonight. It's Mark Good, Ventureman Real Estate, 9500 Pridmore, Rosemont, Illinois. It's our office. I just want to say that we've really appreciated working with your staff. Those of you who don't know, this is the first day the sun's been out, so we have some equipment moving on the site, so we appreciate you giving us permission to do that before we got this final plan approval. We also have three people here from Fresenius Kabi that have come to the meeting, both from the operations side and corporate side. If you need to ask them a question, they're here to do it, but they just wanted to show their support and appreciation for being here in the community. I'll take any questions if you have any.
Thank you. If we have any questions, we'll call you or the representatives up. That being said, comments or questions from the commission?
Mike has one.
Mike.
Chairman, I have one question about the use. I was wondering if one of the representatives from Fresenius would be available for a question.
Good evening.
Name an address, if you would, please.
My name is Brian Coins. My business address is 3 Corporate Drive in Lake Zurich, Illinois.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Brian, and welcome to Pleasant Prairie. And thank you for the, you know, the proposal that you're submitting for us. And it, you know, I think it's got just a lot of promise for the community. But I want to make sure that that we don't miss each other in the night on some of the uses. At our last meeting, where we brought it up, it was identified as we have it tonight as one of our M5 uses. And subsequent to that, there was a correction put out by Fresenius that it was a distribution center. So I think it's important that, you know, for the village's zoning classification, with this being an M5 use, and granted there's some specific definitions on how much is the, you know, number of doors and everything, but I guess that, you know, I'd like to hear that you guys, how you view this as a use for you.
Yeah, so Fresenius Kabi provides product predominantly into clinics and hospitals is where we provide product. What we do is we bring product into our facilities from a host of different areas, whether that is domestically or internationally. And we go through QA processes. We process these items, and we do checks for labeling and quality of the materials to ensure their efficacy and safety to our patients. What we do at that point in time is we stock those products onto our shelves, and then what we do is we go through processing of very specific controls of what people are ordering. So people can order specific batch numbers. They can order specific serial numbers from us. And it's up to our people to make sure that we're processing those specific items going out to our customers.
Okay.
And the hospital, the products, if you think about these products, you won't see them in a CVS. You won't see these in a Walgreens. These are something that it's for really chronically and critically ill patients in hospitals who are the ones who are ultimately using our products.
Yeah. So it's not a repackaging effort, right? It's
repackaging is a different situation when you're talking about pharmaceuticals. And no, we're not going to be licensed as a repackaging facility at this point in time.
Okay.
So it's strictly almost distribution.
Yeah. So we put product out right now to wholesalers, but we also ship directly into hospitals. So we've got a kind of a unique business model of how we move product into the channels. But predominantly, we're moving product into a wholesale channel. If you're familiar with the Cardinal Healths, the McKesson's, the ABC's, are a lot of our customers right now.
Is the product mostly liquid or solid? Or
mostly liquid.
Okay.
Yep. Predominantly, we move all of our products are manufactured in either a vial or they're manufactured in a syringe format. And then recently, we're starting to get into bags. So if you can imagine you're in a hospital and you've got the bag that is hanging there, we're getting into that pretty heavily at this point in time.
Are there any plans in the future for packaging at all?
Packaging gets into a whole other set of licensing and protocols that would go into it, and at this point in time, we're not looking at that necessarily.
Okay. Do we have a question?
Well, it's on the edge. No, I mean, you know, I don't want to be in a situation where we're walking something back after we've said yes, and I think based on the early representations from the developer that this would be an assembly activity.
Well, we do some assembly work. You know, we have done. We're not licensed as a repackager, but in the case of protocols where I've had to reprocess something, I have reprocessed something under what's called a protocol in a pharmaceutical business. And we've done some type of work where we're adding some type of labeling to it. Or as an example, we had in a history, we had a product that we needed to add a little needle to it, and we added the needle at the facility.
Okay. Yep. All right. That being said, I mean, I think the ordinance speaks for itself, and I believe under our development agreement that we have with the developer, you know, for some reason that changes. If you guys, you know, expand into a different area and you go to a different building, and the subsequent use would still have to be manufacturing. I'd recommend approval subject to any other, you know, motions or questions.
Make the motion. We could talk on it.
Okay.
Great question to staff about clarification and some of the documentation, though.
I'm sorry.
I have a question. So on page 4, it says item F recommendation. Should that be item A and B? Just to make sure that we're... Yeah, it's got the, okay, A and B, and then it's got the memorandum of understanding. So just to make sure that our documentation is squared up. Okay, all right, no problem. I just want to make sure.
Just a reminder to the commission members, bring your microphones closer to your mouth so people can hear. Thank you. Okay, anybody else got any questions? Mike, you go ahead.
I'd like to make a motion that we approve the certified surveys as presented, along with the site and operational approval for Fresenius Kabi. And as part of this motion, just so I make sure it not so much for Fresenius Kabi, but going in the future, I would really prefer to see the, as we had Fresenius here tonight, as Venture One goes ahead with their development, I think it'd be important for the commission to, in the earlier steps of these development proposals, to have the actual business or user to be here so that we're relying on their representations rather than the people selling the land. I think that, you know, would make it, you know, everything on a clear footing going forward. So that would be my motion.
So your motion is for the certified survey maps and the MOU and TID 7 improvements?
Yes.
Is there a second to that?
Second.
Motion made and seconded for item A, that's the certified survey maps, the MOU, and TID 7 improvements. All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed, the ayes have it. Item B.
If there aren't any questions, Mr. Chairman, I would move that the Plan Commission approve the preliminary site and operational plans subject to the comments and conditions of the Village Staff Report of May 13, 2019.
Second?
Second.
Motion made and seconded for approval of the preliminary site and operational plan. All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed, the ayes have it. Thank you. We'll take item C and D together. Item C is a public hearing. We'll take comments on both C and D, but separate action on both. Item C is a public hearing in consideration of a zoning text amendment, and item D is a preliminary site and operational plan. Who's got this, Gene?
Mr. Chairman, members of the Plan Commission, the first item, item C, is the consideration of a zoning text amendment for the request of Brian Dunn of Mead & Hunt on behalf of Harbo of America Manufacturing, LLC, owners of the vacant 136.8-acre property generally located at the southwest corner of 120th Avenue or the West Frontage Road and County Trunk Highway C, to amend the Haribo Corporate Campus Development Planned Unit Development Ordinance related to rooftop screening. And item D, consider preliminary site and operational plans, also at the request of Brian Dunn of Mead & Hunt on behalf of Haribo of America Manufacturing, LLC. And this is for the preliminary development plans for the vacant 136.8-acre property generally located at the southwest corner of 120th Avenue and County Trunk Highway C. Again, these items are related and will be discussed at the same time. However, separate actions are required. The petitioner is proposing to develop a 136.8-acre property in phases, generally located at the southwest corner of 120th Avenue with the West Frontage Road and County Trunk Highway C, Wilmot Road, with a new corporate campus for Haribo to better serve the U.S. market. The corporate campus facilities will include food processing, manufacturing of candy and confectionery products, gummy bears and other Haribo products, warehouse and distribution buildings, including a high bay warehouse to house finished goods awaiting shipment to other distribution facilities, potentially research and development and central administrative offices, retail stores, promotional and related services and uses for their employees and promoting the Haribo products, as well as other related ancillary uses such as daycare and fitness centers, museum, possible heliport, and gatehouses. The petitioner continues to develop the plans for the Haribo campus development, and at this time is requesting approval of an amendment to the existing Harbor Planned Unit Development Ordinance and to have the Plan Commission consider preliminary site and operational plans as they continue to develop their final plans. With respect to previous approvals, on May 7th, 2018, the Village Board approved the following. First, comprehensive plan amendments, Ordinance 18-15, that amended the Village of Pleasant Prairie 2035 Comprehensive Land Use Plan Map 9.9 to change the freeway-oriented business center commercial land use designation to the production, manufacturing, industrial land use designation, and to correctly show the location of the field delineated wetlands within the park, recreation, and other open space lands within the field verified wetland land use designations. Next, a master conceptual plan for the construction of the new manufacturing facility to produce gummy bears and other Harbor products. And finally, a zoning map and text amendments, ordinances 18-16 and 18-17, to rezone the field verified wetlands into the C1 Lowland Resource Conservancy District, to rezone all the non-wetland areas into the M5 District, to rezone the entire property into a planned unit development district, and to create a specific PUD ordinance for the development. With respect to their preliminary site and operational plans in this evening, the Harbo campus development is proposed to be developed in phases, and at full build-out may include a production and distribution facility, administration offices, museum, daycare, fitness area, parking structure, and a possible heliport. At this time, the first phase of construction is anticipated to include a 602,000 square foot manufacturing facility, 3 stories, with an administrative support building, 4 stories, 162,500 square foot buffer warehouse building, 6,400 square foot fire pump utility building, 2,900 square foot central utility building, and a 2,170 square foot gatehouse for buffer warehouse building, and a 640 square foot wastewater pretreatment building. It's intended that upon completion of phase one, there would be 450 employees working 3 shifts, 5 days per week. The manufacturing, production, distribution, maintenance, and related activities are intended to operate 24 hours a day. In the future, it's planned that the areas open to the general public will be open regular business hours, generally from 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. Construction of this initial phase is anticipated to start in the fall of 2019, with major construction of the buffer warehouse to be completed in the fall of 2020, and the phase one manufacturing facility to be completed in the fall of 2021. Under public improvements, site access, and parking, the public improvements, including the stormwater facilities, are currently under construction by the Village of Pleasant Prairie within the Prairie Highlands Corporate Park, and all improvements are expected to be completed by October of 2019. Gold Bear Drive will serve as the primary public roadway, providing access to the Harbo entrance for visitors and employees. The driveway access to Harbo at 120th Avenue, which is the west frontage road, will be utilized for truck access and employees working at the warehouse and the distribution portions of the north end of the campus. A third emergency gated driveway access will be from 128th Avenue for employees, and a fourth gated entrance from 128th Avenue will lead to the utility buildings. The driveway connection to the West Frontage Road will require that a small dedication of land be made to the village as public right-of-way in order to allow for a wider than 35-foot wide driveway entrance at 128th Avenue. There will be no direct driveway access from Harbo to County Trunk Highway C, which is Wilmot Road, and no direct connection of 128th Avenue north from the Corporate Park to Highway C through the villages of Bristol and Pleasant Prairie right-of-way at this time. Within the Corporate Park, 128th Avenue will be constructed and terminate in a cul-de-sac to provide access to the new water tower. The construction access for the Harbo development will be from 120th Avenue, which is the frontage road, and Gold Bear Drive. There are 431 parking spaces, including 23 handicapped accessible parking spaces, with 12 truck parking spaces as part of the Phase 1 development. The average daily automobile trips are proposed to be 450 per day, with the average daily truck trips proposed to be about 40 per day for Phase 1. With respect to the zoning text amendment, the petitioner is requesting a minor amendment to the existing Harbo Planned Unit Development Ordinance, which is the PUD, for the rooftop units to be screened by parapet walls and screen walls as they have shown on their attached Exhibit C. Harbo is requesting the PUD modifications due to the proposed size configuration of their campus and other physical attributes of their proposed property, including but not limited to the partial topography and visibility from nearby public roadways. With that, this is a public hearing, and I'd like to first introduce Brian Dunn, who will be the spokesperson for the Harbo team, and then he can introduce the rest of the team that's here with him this evening. And again, he's with Mead and Hunt, their consultant for Madison.
Hello, I'm Brian Dunn with Mead and Hunt, 2440 Deming Way, Middleton, Wisconsin, 53562. With me today is representatives of Harbo, Mr. Art Ruskis, Mr. Martin Draca, and Ms. Lexi Bennett. Questions right now?
Well, we'll open up to the public hearing, and if anybody has any questions, we'll call you back up and you can
answer. Unless you wanted to add anything else to my presentation at this time.
Not right now.
Okay. This is a matter for public hearing. We'll take comments on both item C and D. It's a public hearing. Anybody wishing to speak? We'll just need your name and address for the record, please.
Patrick Perlman, 9430 128th Avenue in Bristol. I just want to know what paraffin screening is as opposed to what originally screenings were originally proposed and how that affects the ordinance. Thank
okay. you. Okay. Do we want to answer this now or do you want to write these down and get them later? How do you want to answer that, Jean?
Well, if there's any other questions, we'll collect those and then I can actually bring Brian up and we've got the picture right that we can show as well.
Anybody else wishing to speak? Anybody else wishing to speak? We'll close the public hearing. Open up to comments and questions from the commission. If you want to answer that question from the gentleman.
So I'm going to have Brian come up. There are a couple of pieces of equipment that they're originally going to have at one location. They've shifted it slightly over towards the manufacturing facility. And a lot of the equipment that they're going to be having on the roof, and I actually have some photographs as well, due to the height of this equipment, and again, 6 or 8 feet, even 10 feet would seem like very tall on the top of the building, but because of the proximity and setback, basically, because this is what is facing the interstate, that's how many hundred feet? Almost several hundred feet, almost 800, 900 feet, that the size and what you would actually see from the interstate is so, so very minimal that we discussed it and looked at it, and the relevancy of putting additional screening, it wasn't practical to be able to do it and what you'd actually be seeing. And again, some of the pieces of equipment just extend so very limited up above the edge of the wall. And the way the ordinance is written, it says basically it's very strict and says anything that extends above should be screened to some extent. And what we're saying is, what they're looking to do is set it back further away from the wall, and because of the distance away, especially facing the interstate, you're not going to be able to see it. So we have indicated that it's not going to be required to do some additional screening by having an additional parapet wall or additional screening adjacent to the interstate.
Okay. Satisfactory answer, I hope. Thank you. The public hearing is closed.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Mike, go ahead.
Gene or Brian, I'm missing something. I'm not catching it. On the overheads here, the area in red that's highlighted in red on the south side and the west side, that's a screening wall?
No. Brian, why don't you – that's – no, not at all.
Okay.
You need to take the microphone.
You can take it with you, Brian.
Microphone.
You can take it with you.
So what we have is this area. Is this the area of red you're talking about?
Right.
This is an office building.
Okay.
And that red is actually part of the office building. That's part of the design of the facility.
Okay.
What we're talking about, the mechanical equipment that you see is up along the top of the building.
Right.
There is a parapet wall, which for anyone that doesn't know, if you're standing on the roof of the building, there's a wall at the edge, so the exterior wall comes up to 3 to 4 feet above the roof line. That's the parapet wall we're talking about. And because of the size of this building, as you look up, that height at the edge will screen quite a bit of equipment as that as that line of sight goes back.
Okay, I was okay with the parapet wall. I got lost on the red square. But that's the office space.
That's the office space.
Okay. All right. Very nice.
Ma'am. Okay. If you want to ask a question, I'll allow it, but you have to come to the microphone. We need your name and address. Even though I closed the public hearing, because we're good neighbors to Bristol, we want to let you talk.
Jane Perlman, 9430 128th Avenue, Bristol. So will it impact our visibility from 128th Avenue?
From 128th Avenue, there's what we're looking at here. This is the east elevation. This is the west elevation. There's some large building elements that actually extend up on the west elevation that will provide some additional screening, especially from that corner of Bristol, that will screen almost all of the mechanical equipment that's on the roof just by the nature of what that structure is. You will be able to see some mechanical equipment on the roof from that corner, but not a lot.
Brian, we're going to put up the overall site plan map. Okay, so now if you want to stand on the other side so they can see it as well. There you go.
So these bump outs right here and here extend up basically a full story above the roof line and will provide screening to the mechanical equipment that sits kind of in the middle of the roof. So from your property here, you're looking across, and that's going to screen just about everything, and that'll screen just about everything. Plus the parapet wall will be some additional screening. Again, you'll see some little bit of the top, but we're intentionally designing it to be as inoffensive as possible. There's some facilities here in Pleasant Prairie that the equipment is just kind of there and up and over, and this is pretty well limited to a height and pretty constant, so it's not going to look jagged and out of place. You're welcome.
And, Brian, isn't it also going to be the same color?
And it will all be generally the same color. The equipment on the roof will be a gray, and then the ductwork will be a gray silver.
Okay. Comments or questions from the commission?
Anybody else? I don't have any. I think it's a very good plan.
Okay, item C, what's your pleasure?
Well, Mr. Chairman, if there aren't any questions by the commission, I would move that the Plan Commission send a favorable recommendation to the Village Board to approve the zoning text amendment as presented at the May 13, 2019 Village Board, staff report.
I'll second.
Motion made a second for approval of the zoning text amendment. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, the ayes have it. Item D, what's your pleasure?
Mr. Chairman, I'd recommend approval of preliminary site and operational plans with the recommendation from some staff. This is going to be an excellent development for the village, and they've done a good job.
I'll second.
Motion made a second for approval of the site and operational plan. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, the ayes have it. You know, we're looking forward to the next phase of this construction, and Pleasant Prairie's very pleased that you chose us for your factory, and I guarantee you won't regret that decision. Thank you.
Yeah, welcome to the village.
We're going to take items E, F, and G together with separate action on all three, and there's only one that's a public hearing. That's item G. And item E is a lot line adjustment. Item F is a certified survey map and vacation of easements. And item D is a public hearing and consideration of zoning map and text amendment. Gene?
Mr. Chairman, members of the Plan Commission, items E, F, and G are related. The staff will be making one presentation. Separate action is required. Item E is to consider the joint request of SR Mills on behalf of Creekside Ventures, LLC, owner of the vacant property located north of 9115 Old Green Bay Road, owned by Eric and Deborah Davidson. And this is for the approval of a lot line adjustment between the properties. Item F is consider the request of Dan Shop with Bear Development, LLC. And this is for the approval of a certified survey map, vacation of easements, development agreement, and related exhibits, including the site development plans. And this is for the Vista at Creekside, proposed apartment development to be located at 91st Street and Old Green Bay Road and extending to Creekside Circle. And item G is the public hearing and consideration of zoning map and text amendments, including residential development plans, the Digital Security Imaging System, or DSIS agreement, as well as a DSIS access easement. Again, I'll be making one presentation. Phase one of the development will include 7 20-unit apartment buildings, a clubhouse, 4 detached garage buildings, and associated site improvements on 14.4 acres to be known as the Vista at Creekside. Phase 2 will include the platting of 49 single-family and 1 two-family lot, as shown on the draft preliminary plat for the Creekside Terrace that is currently being reviewed by the village staff. The required public hearing for this portion of the development will be held this summer. Upon approval of the preliminary plat, the developer intends to submit a final plat with all related documents so that construction of the remaining public improvements for the entire development can be completed at the same time. The petitioner at this time then is requesting a lot line adjustment, CSM, vacation of easements, development agreement, and site development plans, zoning map and text amendments, the development plans, and the DSIS documents for the apartment development located at 91st Street and Old Green Bay Road. As you can see on the slide, we're going to be focused on the west side of his development tonight. Some background information. And I actually have gone through a lot of this in the past, as this item has been before the Plan Commission and the Board many times since last October, November. So I'm not actually going to read through all of the same information that we have presented in the past. So I'm just going to kind of talk from the slides. Again, at the original time that the first Creekside development was proposed to the village, 2005 to 2010 time period, it was going to be developed with a total of 312 units, and it was going to be developed in several phases. At the time, it was supposed to be 24 single-family lots, 34 two-unit condo buildings, 17 four-unit condos, 19 eight-unit condos. The undeveloped land was proposed to be developed pursuant to that original Creekside area project development, and it had included 158 additional condominiums for that project. So what happened was the recession, change in developer, everything went to the bank, it went to a new developer. So Bear Development picked it up, and in 2015 they presented a conceptual plan. And at that time, their conceptual plan had identified that they were going to develop the balance of Creekside as a single-family subdivision. There were a lot of costs associated with the Creekside development, including the completion of Creekside Circle and the bridge and just a number of costs. And with the construction costs the way they are today, the developer had decided sometime after that they would withdraw the single-family concept and they would look at trying to develop it again in another way. So in 2019, the developer submitted a series of conceptual plans to be evaluated by the staff, by the Plan Commission, by the Village Board. And as part of this conceptual plan, it continued to show single-family as part of the main area of the Creekside development. But then what it did was it also identified that there would be an apartment or multifamily segment to this particular project. And at that time, it was identified that there would be 7 20-unit apartment buildings. We went back and forth. We looked at options 1 through 4A or 4B. We went through many options. We worked with the property owners. We worked with the plan commission. We worked with the developer. We talked and met with the condo association, and we met with some of the residents out there, and we went back and forth with respect to this development. So it was finally in this spring on March 18th that we all have reached an agreement, and they are now moving forward with this development. It is now moving forward in two phases, a phase one, which again is the 720-unit apartment buildings, the garage, and the clubhouse. And then this phase two is 54 single-family lots and 1 two-family lot. So, again, they are looking to get permitted and start construction on the apartment development first, and then right behind it, they're going to be coming in with the single-family. The Vista at Creekside Apartments, again, is 140 units. It's intended to be constructed at 91st Street and Old Green Bay Road, with one of the apartment buildings just on the east side of Creekside Circle. The main entrance to the development will be from Old Green Bay Road at 91st. At this entrance will be a clubhouse, which includes their leasing and management office, and a community gathering space and an exercise room. Each of the apartments provides for 8 units on the first floor and 12 units on the second floor. They range in size from 713 square feet to 1,325 square feet, with 8 units in each building having an attached garage. All units are considered condominium style, in that all units have an individual entry from the exterior of the building, which means there's no common hallways or shared entrances. The buildings will be constructed of a variety of building materials, including stone, brick, hardy board, and they have more of the gray-blue tone colors. Each building provides a variety of unit types with various rental options, including 11 one-bedroom with one bath, 1 two-bedroom with one bath, 6 two-bedroom with two bath, and 2 three-bedroom and two bath. As discussed at all of the previous public hearings held earlier this year, the apartments are going to be developed as workforce housing. The petitioner has submitted and successfully received an award of housing tax credits to fund a portion of the development for workforce housing. There are many types of tax credits used to construct this housing. The housing tax credits awarded to this project are not for low income, but for workforce. Low income housing typically serves in area median incomes at or below the 30% area median income. The housing development being proposed is income restricted, as workforce housing that provides for rental rates that are similar to our actual current market rates for our area. The workforce housing is designed for active individuals and families with working parents and single working professionals or seniors that have a lawful, consistent source of income. These units are dedicated to those not typically understood to be targets of affordable housing. The workforce housing requirements mandates a maximum rental rate as well as a maximum income for the residents. And in your packets and on the screen, we went through this matrix in the past that talked about how many units are set aside, what square footage would be allowed, the maximum rent that could be charged, the maximum income, minimum hourly wages, as well as the maximum hourly wages. All tenants must have 3 times their total monthly rent and income to qualify for any unit within the proposed development. The goal of these units is to offer efficient and effective and sustainable housing solutions that enable working individuals in moderate income vocations or emerging professionals to live in the community in which they work. The market area income information from 2018 ESRI documentation provided by Baker Tilly Virchow Krause shows that 28% of the village residents have annual incomes less than $50,000 per year, and 42% of the village residents have a gross annual income less than $75,000. So BEAR's requirement is that no more than 30% of the gross income can be spent on monthly rent. So there's, again, a chart that provides the Pleasant Prairie area income for 2018, and it identifies the household income bands and the income ranges. So what they did was they evaluated to make sure that there were residents in Pleasant Prairie that have the type of jobs that could afford these housing. The rent, excluding utilities and the detached garages, which is more money, are all listed. So they range for a one-bedroom of just under $700 to $1,116, and it also identifies their income ranges. The two bedrooms range from $836 to $1,338, and the three-bedroom units range from $966 to just over $1,500. The workforce housing program requires rental limitations, as the chart has identified above. And so that information, again, we went through this all previously at the previous Plan Commission meetings. There was additional information that was provided by the developer for us to get a better understanding as to the rental rates and how the housing split information and housing compliance. And I've read through all of this information, and it's going to be made part of the public record this evening. But again, how it's established to guarantee an adequate supply of high-quality, brand-new homes or apartments for residents that have a varying range of household incomes. It talks about the full monthly rent is due by the residents. There's no rental subsidy. There's no Section 8. Of the 104 units, 56 have levels at the market rate. The remaining are roughly at a 35% discount. And then it goes on to talk about some of the obligations of the residents. They have to post security deposits, and there's a number of things that they have to do as residents as well. One of the questions that had come up a couple of times is that are there any restrictions on the developer with respect to this workforce housing? There's a 30-year land use restriction agreement that is being entered into with WIDA post-construction, and that is monitored, again, by WIDA. There is resident qualification information that we talked about as to what would qualify someone to be able to rent at this location. We asked also if there are any occupancy limits that, you know, you can only have so many residents in that unit, and then it talked about how many could be in each bedroom and so on and so forth. So we worked through all of those issues with them. And then one of the things that we discussed at length is that apartment management was really the critical piece to any type of development in the community, any apartment development. The success or failure, whether or not rental or owner-occupied, it's really in the management. Most village code violations that the village receives are actually for owner-occupied properties, not necessarily for apartments. With apartments, we have one management company, one owner to go to get any resolution to any concerns that the village has. Bear Development has had a very good management record and intends to own and manage these apartments for a long time. In this case, a minimum of 15 years as part of their portfolio. They also have policies and practices in place to ensure that the exterior of the buildings and the sites continue to be well maintained. Then also listed in the staff comments, some of the details with respect to property management, the hours, their occupancy rates, how they will operate cleaning up and monitoring each of the units, how they will manage their parking, both on-site, the parking on 91st Street. They have pet policies that they put into place and how they're going to manage those. They've got eviction processes, non-renewal processes. If people make too much money, they're not paying rent on time, you know, whatever it might be, they have policies in place. So I just wanted to let you know that we've gone through a lot of those issues. If we have any questions, SR is here this evening to talk about those. There are a couple of other items on the agenda related to this project. One is a lot line adjustment they had spoke about, and this is to adjust that little notch of additional land that they own that jutted down into the property owned by the Davidsons. They are going to be doing a lot line adjustment and transferring that yellow rectangle of property to the Davidsons, and so that they have more of a rectangular piece of land. The next is a certified survey map that they have submitted to us to create three lots for the construction of the apartment development. Lot 1 is 4.4 acres, Lot 2 is 7.9 acres, and Lot 3 is 2.0 acres. These lots will be developed with the apartment buildings, garages, and the clubhouse, as well as you can see the on-site stormwater management. Actually, I can't see it on that plan, but there's the detention basin, a retention basin is also on the site. The existing buildings on Lot 2 of the CSM are intended to be raised. They are in the process of acquiring that property. I believe they intend to close on May 15th. The developer is purchasing lot 2, but they will allow the owner to remain in the home for up to 120 days after the sale while they finish cleaning up, raising, and taking care of the rest of the property. If for some reason construction begins on the lot 2 prior to the raising of the home, they will be working this out with the property owner to securely fence the area so that the home is not located within the construction area. One of the things with the Creekside development is that it was originally platted as a condominium development with an expansion area. And as such, there are a number of easements that were recorded on that property. Those easements are no longer applicable because that area is either going to be an apartment or single-family homes. So as a result, there's a number of easements that, because they were based on that original development, need to be vacated. So all those new required easements are being placed on the certified survey map or on the subdivision plat, and all the old easements from the condominium development are being vacated. And they relate to sewer, water, grading, stormwater, cross-access, all for required improvements now for the apartment development. With respect to public infrastructure, site access, Creekside Circle and 91st Street have been dedicated by the original developer. Municipal sanitary sewer is extended in a portion of Creekside Circle to service the existing development and the future phase two of the development within the vacant areas east of the creek. The primary access for the vista at Creekside will be from Old Green Bay Road at 91st Street, as shown with the red arrow. There'll be a bridge and roadway infrastructure completed as part of Creekside Circle that allows access eventually now all the way around to 93rd Street, 63rd, and 66th Avenues with the proposed Phase 2 development. 91st Street via Old Green Bay Road will be the primary construction access and haul roadway for both phases of the development infrastructure and residential construction. Temporary no construction signs will be required at certain entrances adjacent to 93rd Street in order to minimize and basically restrict construction, heavy construction trucks from coming in through the existing Creekside development. Providing multiple public roadway connections to and through the development allows for the traffic to be dispersed. So residents living in the neighborhood will likely travel their easiest pathway out, and that will be west on 91st to Old Green Bay Road. But when the entire development is completed, people, residents, will be allowed to travel through a Creekside Circle on the east side, the west side, or out 91st in order to exit from the development. As part of the Main Street Market development, which is just to the south of this location, on the corner of 165 and Old Green Bay Road, a traffic impact analysis, or TIA, was required. And that TIA identified as part of the Main Street Market development that there'll be a dedicated right turn lane added to Dabbs Farm Drive between Old Green Bay Road and Highway 31. And this new lane is anticipated to be added within the next 5 years. And Peggy just kind of marked it with a little red line on the screen. As required with the conceptual plan approval, the existing traffic study was used as a basis for the traffic engineer. And they have verified that no other improvements are needed at the intersection of Old Green Bay Road and 91st Street other than possible XL and DCL lanes just as you're coming in and out of 91st as a result of the 91st Street connection. The technical memorandum dated April 23rd, 2019 from TADI is in the packets. The public sidewalk and private pedestrian pathways being installed by the developer at the developer's cost are also shown on drawings for the phase one of the development, shown in green on the development slide. Phase two will require the developer to install concrete sidewalks around the interior area of the Creekside Circle right-of-way to provide pedestrian access that meets the ADA standards, and then this is to the Creekside Park, which is at the south east corner of the development. Sidewalks will be installed on the outer side of Creekside Circle adjacent to the single-family lots, being created with a sanitary sewer pedestrian access path over the sanitary sewer line at the northwest corner of the development. So that northwest corner that has the sanitary sewer, there will be a path installed over that as well. A walking path, but also accessibility for Public Works to be able to maintain that sanitary sewer line. As noted at the board meeting, the sidewalk maintenance and snow removal for the sidewalks would be the responsibility of the abutting landowners after they're constructed. Phase 1 public improvements will serve the areas adjacent to lots 1, 2, and 3 of the proposed CSM, and the remainder of the public improvements will be constructed with Phase 2 upon the approval of the final plat as outlined in the development agreement. One other thing that I just want to touch on is the floodplain boundary adjustment, and this occurred back in 2003. The Village Board adopted a resolution to approve the floodplain boundary adjustment for the Creekside development. In January of 2005, the original developer obtained the required permits from FEMA to begin the floodplain adjustment work. This grading work to amend the 100-year floodplain, including the installation of the bridge on the south side of the development, has been completed, and the remainder of the grading work in a second bridge crossing the north side of the development along the construction, with the construction of the remainder of Creekside Circle needs to be completed. So there is quite a bit of work on the very north end that needs to be done. Then they'll have to submit some final as-built drawings for the entire floodplain analysis work that was completed. Wetlands fill permits were obtained by the developer from the Wisconsin DNR and the Army Corps of Engineers to fill small portions of the wetlands for the construction of Creekside Circle. The remainder of the wetlands on Lot 2 will remain, so you can see those small green areas that are being filled for the public roads. Zoning map and text amendments. The wetlands on Lot 2 are proposed to be rezoned into the C1 Lowland Resource Conservancy District. Lots 1 and 2 west of the wetlands and 3 are proposed to go into the R11 district, which is a multiple family district. And the area on Lot 2 east of the wetlands are proposed to be rezoned into the PR1, which is Neighborhood Park and Recreational District. The 100-year floodplain will remain unchanged at this time, and lots 1, 2, and 3 will be rezoned into the PUD, which is that Planned Unit Development Overlay for the multifamily area. The comprehensive plan would also need to be amended at such time that the floodplain work is completed so that the land use plan and the zoning map are consistent. The PUD that I mentioned will allow for dimensional flexibility, provided there's defined community benefits. The attached PUD ordinance allows for those dimensional variations. First, to allow for more than one multifamily building per parcel, to set specific setbacks for the apartment buildings, detached garages, and the clubhouse, to require a total of 322 parking spaces, including 125 enclosed within the building. In addition, 56 parking spaces are being provided directly behind each attached garage. Specifically, the following parking spaces are being provided on each of the lots. Buildings A4 through A7, north of 91st Street, which includes 80 apartment units, provides a total of 195 parking spaces. 97 surface parking spaces with 34 detached garage spaces, 32 attached spaces, plus 32 spaces directly behind the attached garages. Buildings A2 and A3 and the clubhouse south of 91st, which includes 40 apartment units, provides 126 parking spaces, 64 surface, 30 detached garage spaces, 16 attached garage, plus 16 spaces directly behind the garages. And building A1 east of Creekside Circle, which includes 20 apartment units, provides a total of 57 parking spaces, 36 surface, 5 detached garage spaces, 8 attached garage spaces, and 8 spaces directly behind the garages. Again, this is very critical, as you know, that we make sure that there's adequate parking for the apartment buildings, because the village does not allow for overnight, or we do not encourage, and we require that each development allow for on-site parking for the people, the residents, as well as their guests and others coming to the units. Part of the community benefit is that the developer would provide fire sprinklers within the apartment buildings, to provide a minimum of 3 pet-free buildings, to limit the size and the breed of the pets, to no more than 1 pet per apartment, not to exceed 40 pounds at mature size, to add additional park equipment in the public park that's at that southeast corner, to provide enhanced architectural details and materials for the buildings and enhanced landscaping. In addition, the multifamily development will be equipped with the DSIS system. In addition, where the proposed apartment buildings share property lines with the existing single-family homes, specifically by Old Green Bay Road, the developers will implement extensive landscaping and privacy fencing to maintain adequate separation, buffer, and privacy between the apartments and the neighboring single-family, which are very close, and they're nonconforming in that area. So with that, this is a lot of items for this development. I'd like to just introduce SR Mills at this time to address the Plan Commission, and the staff would be happy to answer any other questions to these three items.
Welcome back.
It's like I've never left. SR Mills, 4011 80th Street, Kenosha. Thank you again for all the time and effort on this, specifically for staff. It's been a very busy process, and as they all are, but this, I think, more than most. So here to answer any questions you might have. I don't think there's anything that really deviates from the prior discussions, working diligently to work through the engineering items, work through final aesthetics, but everything is on par the way we've all discussed it to date. But, again, appreciate the time, and we'll answer any questions I can.
Yeah, be close, SR. I'm sure we'll have some questions for you. This item G is a matter for public hearing, but we will take comments on items E and F as well. So anybody wishing to speak? Anybody wishing to speak? Anybody wishing to speak? We'll close the public hearings and open up to comments and questions from the commission. SR, I have one question for you, if I could. The units that allow pets, namely dogs, what is your agency's policy on how they handle dogs that continuously bark?
So we try and handle that very consistently. So that's one of the things that it's important to breed restrictions, size restrictions. We have evicted folks before if there's dogs that don't stop barking, as it becomes a nuisance to the balance of the tenant population.
Okay, thank you. Comments, Deb?
Actually, I have two questions. One is really, if I'm reading the sidewalk plan right. So the houses on 90th Place and 90th Street, the front of those houses won't have sidewalks?
90th? So
those two cul-de-sacs?
Correct. That was part of the discussion with staff early on, that because the balance of the subdivision lots to the east do not have sidewalks, that we've agreed to run the loop all the way down and around and install sidewalks by the condos to the south, so we received some dispensation, so not putting them into the actual cul-de-sacs.
Okay. Deb, it just seems odd to me that we're doing it sort of half and half.
Yeah, so that was a discussion that we had at the village board level. In particular, what we were trying to do is we were trying to create complete loops or complete blocks, and with cul-de-sacs, we considered it more of a dead end. And so the thought process was, instead of having sidewalks go around the cul-de-sacs, because there isn't a heavy load of traffic, the ability to walk on the street and so forth is a little bit more feasible, but that it would be more valuable for us to complete blocks rather than in complete loops, rather than create a bunch of sidewalks that dead end. So that was a consideration. That's something that we talked about quite extensively at the board level.
Okay. And when do you start to plan on marketing these and signing leases? I mean, I know you haven't, but what's the timeline on all of that?
Yeah, very, very quickly. So one thing we're certainly sensitive to is getting out in front of any approving agencies and making sure we go through the process. From a single-family standpoint, we've received a lot of feedback and being in that business extensively here in southeastern Wisconsin. We'll probably start that process late summer, I would see. Part of the problem is we don't want to get too far ahead of it because there's typically when somebody's looking for that
balance,
they want it pretty quickly.
Right.
From a multifamily standpoint, we usually start the heavy marketing about 120 days before our first delivery. Similar to single family, if we start to we'll have waiting lists and try and create a lot of excitement from that standpoint, but we won't start taking active applications until about 120 days.
Okay. Thank you.
I was just wondering, on the financial aspect of it, the workforce income, is that, I see there was kind of a survey done by, was it Baker Tilly that did that? Every year, is that done? So the minimums and maximums are, or is there just an inflationary clause?
No, it's a good question. It is done every year. And so it goes back to the area median incomes at the county. And then so every county is different really throughout the country. And so it will continue to.
So that's kind of a statewide thing that they do?
Yeah, it's really a federal. So it's every county in the country has area median incomes that tie back to what the citizens make there. And then it's weighted accordingly. So 60% area median income in Kenosha County is very different than a 60% area median income in Ozaukee County. There's differences. Or Dane County is another good one.
Excellent. And then that drives the rent.
Correct.
Basically.
Yep.
Yeah. So what's the timing on phase two?
So the only reason there's a differentiation between phase one and phase two is so we can get started on the multifamily. We want to, knowing that we have surety tied back to phase two, that we're looking to start that as soon as we possibly can. So we need to go through the subdivision platting process, which takes a little bit more time. So hopeful also from a buyout, from a construction standpoint, that we can do it as together as we can and not bifurcate that process. Okay. So it's a long answer to as quick as we possibly can.
Okay.
Rock.
Question and comment. So a comment, I'm glad you guys found a compromise on the sidewalks. I know that's been going on for a while of a happy medium. It sounds like you found one. Then the question is, I noticed when I saw the trees were cut down to the north of lot one, in lot one, that there's a house that's like right on the property line to the south of it.
Correct. So we're talking south of the proposed clubhouse.
The clubhouse, right.
Correct.
So is that just going to stay an open space in between there, looks
it
like?
Or? We'll likely have a 6-foot a PVC fence there. And it's as you can see from the lot lines, it's kind of a strange scenario with how it wraps around. And,
mm-hmm.
and we actually own some property, but there's an easement. So we're trying to separate those spaces so we're not on top of them. And
yeah, it's pretty tight. So, yeah.
Yeah, so we think 6-foot PVC fence on a component of it will still have adequate landscaping.
Sure. Okay, thank you.
I do have one other question. So can you tell me again where that right turn lane is going to go? Did you say was that on Green Bay Road?
It's on Dabbs Farm Drive between Old Green Bay and Green Bay Road. So there'll be a dedicated right-hand turn lane. Right now, the right-hand turn lane, you have to almost be to the intersection before the right-hand turn lane. Yep. And by putting in a dedicated lane, that'll allow for traffic to be in three different lanes in that area. And that'll be put in as part of Main Street Markets development.
I'm glad. I drive through it twice a day, so I'm very glad.
SR, one question. On the installation of the sidewalks in existing Creekside, are there any trees coming down in that right-of-way?
Well, I'm not sure I can answer that offhand.
If there are you going to...
Yeah, I think that's a detail we'd have to discuss. I don't know if they're really... You guys know if there'd be trees
Bill, down? Only because you're the president, Bill. Come on up.
Bill Limo, 9285 66th Avenue. The sidewalks is the issue I want to talk about, but there are about 24 trees that were placed in during original construction that we've maintained 12, 13 years of maturity now. We've got a range in trunk diameter from 2 to 5 inches. So my question tonight was what the plan was for that. Again, just to talk about my opposition and our opposition to the sidewalks coming in to the existing property. I mean, it does impose a financial burden on every homeowner in Creekside Crossing. So 112 owners will have to share the cost burden of keeping those sidewalks clean in that area. Nobody else in the village that I'm aware of is forced to forced to do that. So yeah. It's quite a big deal. It could be, you know, depending on the amount of storms, we're talking $10,000 to $15,000 divided between the 112 owners. So right. That's a concern. But then again, the trees that
Bill,
they're about 12 feet off the curb. Okay. I'm not sure what the setback is for sidewalks from the curb.
Okay.
It seems like it'd be right in that lane.
Just okay. That'll be addressed by staff and by SR. Any other comments or questions, Wayne?
Before we make any motions, I just want to thank our village staff and administration for all the work they've done to get this project going, and also your staff at your office, because it took a lot of time, but I think we're going to get this all settled tonight.
Appreciate that.
And I'm sure it's going to be another quality development that enhances the village.
SR, anything else?
No, we don't want to rip down any trees, so we'll work with staff and try and figure that out.
You know, a great amount of appreciation goes to the residents of Creekside. I mean, this is a very unique process that we went through with the amount of public hearings and the professionalism that they showed us in their comments and questions and staff and how much they have gone through, and including the board and this commission. So it worked out well. I know we're not totally happy, Bill, but we're going to do the best we can with what we have. With that, any other comments or questions? With that, item E is the lot line adjustment. What's your pleasure?
Mr. Chairman, I'd move approval of item E, the certified survey map.
It's a lot line adjustment.
Oh, pardon me. I'm one down. Okay. The lot line plan commission to send a favorable recommendation to the village board to approve the lot line adjustment subject to the comments and conditions of the May 13, 2019 village staff report.
Second.
Motion made and seconded for approval of the lot line adjustment. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, the ayes have it. Item F, certified survey map and vacation of easements. It's your pleasure.
Move to approve the certified survey map, vacation of easements.
I'll move to approve the certified survey map, vacation of easements, development agreement, and related exhibits, including the site development plan, subject to the comments and conditions of the May 13th Builders Staff Report.
Second.
Motion made and seconded for approval of the certified survey map and vacation of easements. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, the ayes have it. Item G, consideration of the zoning map and text amendments, including the GSIS.
I move to approve the residential development plans, the DSIS agreement, and the DSIS access easement.
Second.
Motion made and seconded for approval of the zoning map, text amendment, and DSIS agreements. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, the ayes have it. Thank you, SR.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Appreciate it.
Item H, affidavit of correction of a certified survey map.
Mr. Chairman, members of the Plan Commission, this is a request of resolve from JSD Professional Services, Inc. for approval of an affidavit of correction to certified survey map 2877 to correct the legal description of a wetland and the private water main and sanitary sewer mains access and maintenance easement with the Breeze Terrace development. The proposed affidavit of correction to correct CSM number 2877 is specifically for the following corrections. One, to correct the tie distance for the dedicated wetland preservation and protection access and maintenance easement located on the northwest portion of Lot 1. Southwest portion of Lot 1. And number two, to modify the location of the eastern portion of the dedicated private water mains and private sanitary sewer mains access and maintenance easement. This revision to the easement is based on the revised location of the proposed sanitary sewer line for the easternmost building, building I, need glasses, which requires two sanitary services. Therefore, the sanitary main needed to be extended south and also shift slightly to the east to avoid running under a proposed dumpster enclosure. The revised utility location will now be within the corrected easement. The staff recommends approval and recommends that the Plan Commission send a favorable recommendation to the board to approve the affidavit of correction to CSM 2877, subject to the petitioner recording and the correction document and providing a recorded copy back to the village within 30 days.
Comments or questions? What's your pleasure?
Move approval.
Second.
Motion made and seconded for approval of the affidavit of correction and certified survey map. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, the ayes have it. Adjournment.
Move to adjourn.
Second.
Motion made and seconded for adjournment. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, the ayes have it. Thank you. Thank you, Herbal.